welcome to Game Changers. I am joined today by an amazing colleague who's going to talk to us a little bit about their, I'm going to call it a squiggly pathway.
Yeah, I would probably say so. It's a bit windy.
That's it. I like that. Squiggly, I like squiggly. Stealing it from the podcast, Squiggly Careers. I'm joined by Molly today, and we're going to sort of talk about how Molly got into kind of teaching game. Mm-hmm. But it's not exactly, can I say this, like a really direct route from school to going, I'm going to be a game designer.
Yeah, I think it's quite windy. I think it's quite a common path for concept artists, because I teach concept art specifically. I don't think a lot of us start out in games.
Okay.
I don't think a lot of us start out in games. For the people that I know, a lot of us have a fine art background.
So in school, what were you directed towards? Because I'm not saying that in school you were like, I'm going to be a concept artist in game.
No, I was directed towards, I was always quite good at art, and I was always very good at history. But so it's like one of those two subjects that you don't kind of think go together. And then as I've gotten older, I've realised that I can use kind of like my love for history and stuff in concept art. But I started off, I did fine art. And then in college, I went on to do fine art and graphics. And I also did film studies.
Can I just say, because I used to teach film studies,
the
obviously the best of all the possible ways into anything that you can do.
Yeah. And then I did a multidisciplinary foundation. So it was an art and design foundation, but I did multidisciplinary, and then I started to do textiles and stuff. So I've always sewn, I've always done a bit of sewing, and then I have always had a massive passion for games. So I've always played games ever since I was really young. I've got two older brothers, so I'd always be playing games with them, watching them play games from when I was very small.
So I've got to ask, because I know I'm interrupting like the narrative,
no.
But what were you playing?
So,
what did you like playing? And then what were you playing that you absolutely shouldn't have been playing because you had two older brothers?
I remember vividly, I've always been a massive Zelda fan. Always been a massive Legend of Zelda fan.
I've got it sitting, the new one is sitting, waiting.
Yeah, it's really good.
It won't let me play yet.
Will it not?
No, it's on like some sort of weird
I thought you were on about Tears of the Kingdom.
The new one, where I get to play as a girl.
Yes, I know. It's exciting. It's exciting. I'm dead excited. But I've always been a massive Zelda fan. I started out probably... Twilight Princess is probably a game that I remember so vividly, and I've played it maybe about 15 times.
All the way through.
Completed
nice.
Every single time. My fiance, every time I play it, she's like, are you having a bad day? And I'm like, yeah, I'm having a bad day.
Is it your go-to?
It's my go-to for
so
like
you have
a bad
like a
day,
game.
Yeah.
I have like stuff I'll watch for a bad day, and it's comforting.
Yeah, it is comforting.
And you just go, I know what this is, and I know how it makes me feel.
Yeah, definitely.
Nice.
But also, Link's Awakening was a really, really, that's a really, really special game to me. I love that game. And for a game that I probably should never have watched, Doom, the original Doom, my brother used to play that constantly, and I was fascinated by it. Fascinated.
What was it?
I don't know. I think it's the, I was probably about seven, but the movement of the camera.
Yeah.
I don't know. It was fascinating.
It was just,
like
is it one of those things where you go, oh my god, that's so cool because X Y Z diddly diddly. You know, like there's stuff. Because obviously, it's so funny that you're saying that you did art and history at school. I did art and history at school as well. And they wanted me to be like an art historian, and I was like,
they tried to direct me towards art historian, and I was like, I want the creativity.
That's so weird. I wonder if I don't know what you like, because I don't know the game. Really always comes up as a thing where they go,
no.
Oh, like, do you know what you could do?
This is what I really want to try and start doing, because I don't think a lot of high school teachers, specifically, I don't think a lot of high school teachers consider game as a pathway.
Yeah.
Especially art teachers.
Mm-hmm.
And I really, really want to try and get that introduction into games at a far earlier, like, stage in people's lives, because you go and do an art GCSE, and I guarantee somebody's dad has said, why are you doing that? Because there's no jobs in it. But there is jobs in it, there are careers in it, and there's careers for, and I'm really passionate about the fact that there are careers for women in programming and things like that. And if we introduce them that in even IT classes in high school, I think that would make such a difference.
I think it's interesting, isn't it? Because again, like, there's a small age gap between us. I'm like the crypt keeper in our department.
Stop.
Yeah, I am. But it's really interesting that we both kind of did art. I came from an art background as well. Because I'm that chunk older, game wasn't really a thing, if that makes sense. Yeah. It wasn't really an obvious thing. So I went into film, which I feel, in a way, it's like a similar... It's associated but not associated, and you're not told a lot about it when you're at school. But it's really interesting that we're both female, we both did sort of the art history thing, we're both being pushed into sort of, why don't you do this?
Yeah.
And we're not really being told about these other pathways and avenues that sort of, like, exist. And I know that you're passionate about getting into schools and talking to people, just about the idea that there's other stuff that you can do with your skills as an artist.
There are.
But you were talking about your love of history and the fact that you kind of influence what you do by research.
Yeah.
So it's interesting that that doesn't ever really come up either.
There's a massive overlap. I mean, we always say in our department, the concept art department, that the best concept artist is somebody who has interests outside of games and outside of art as well. I mean, one of the first things I always say to students is, it pays to be a nerd, and you can be a nerd about something really specific, and there is a niche for that. Like, I specialise mostly in historical costume design.
Mm-hmm.
That's a really small niche, and I can go even further into that niche. And it pays off to kind of understand, I don't know, 16th century embroidery techniques when you're a concept artist, because it's about building realistic worlds.
Mm-hmm.
And the more that you know, the more that you can influence your design with that.
So that's always my thing. So again, it's like a film background thing or whatever. It kind of goes across all the things. It's this idea of, okay, so if you know about 16th century embroidery, let's say, you know what the weight of the fabric should be.
Yes.
You know what the movement or lack thereof would be. And then you can apply that forward.
Yeah.
But then you can apply that to a world that is actually futuristic, but where
they apply some of these techniques.
A
really good example of it is in the Star Wars prequels, actually, how they used specifically like Tudor silhouettes to inspire the costumes and stuff is really interesting.
But really niche.
But that shows that somebody who designed that costume knows their stuff and knows how they can use it to kind of create something that feels futuristic but also kind of harkens back to
a past that we know.
So there's that sense of familiarity. It's not completely divorced from our current perception of the world, but it is something that feels new, unique and interesting at the same time.
It's that interesting thing of going, we all know what wood sounds like, or we all know what cotton feels like.
Yeah.
Like, I can look at my jeans and go, or jeans on someone else and go, I actually know what that feels like, and I know how that moves. But then to use it in a different way, it's kind of connecting these things through, and it is genuine. It's super interesting.
But it is really interesting.
Do these conceptual things. Yours is fashion and kind of the making of clothes and like how it moves. But then we can do that with cars. We can do that with the environment.
Absolutely.
We can do that with all of these kind of conceptual things. I'm going to, like, I know, I actually, for a change, I actually know what concept art is. Do you want to, just in case anyone's, because part of this podcast is maybe people who are just, like, interested in stuff, but don't completely know
all of
the technical terms or, like, what this is. Or what. Can you give us, like, just, like, a general overview of what concept art is and
kind
of what it's, not boundaries are, but, like, where it cuts off and moves into sort of maybe something else, if
like illustration.
Sense. Yeah.
So concept art is basically, it's all of the initial little sketches. So we always say to students, right, you need to stop being precious about your artwork because you're going to be drawing a lot. You're not drawing for yourself anymore. You need to draw within these set parameters, but it's your ideas and your iteration. So you need to be continuously drawing, you need to be continuously coming up with ideas. And then somebody turns around and says, that's too insane, you need to pull it back. So then you have to alter it, you go back, you draw more. It's all about the quick sketches, it's all about the ideas rather than the final finished piece. And then when you start getting into the final finished piece, that is still concept art, but that's where you start going over to illustration.
Right.
So if you look at something like the League of Legends splash arts, for example, they are not concept art. A lot of people think they are. Mm-hmm. They are not concept art. That is illustration.
So it's about, is it like a finish in a way, sort of more detailed and much more kind of involved in a way?
Yes.
And really fleshing out the visual world.
You're basically helping to build the, if we're talking about a game, you're helping to build the visual world that you will see. There are some really, really good concept art books out there that do look into that. There are some that really don't and only show you the nice, finished, polished things, and which is part of it.
Is that a little bit where people get sort of slightly confused?
Yeah, I think where people get misled with concept art, because I think a lot of people perceive it as, well, you're creating these beautiful, finished pieces. And sometimes it's not necessarily about the drawing, it's about the ideas behind the drawing and how well you can communicate an idea. Then we always use the term, and our students are probably sick of hearing it, you're an idea factory. That's what you're there for. You're there to generate ideas. You're there to try and flesh out a world based on strict parameters. Sometimes they could be really vague, and sometimes they could be so rigid that you can hardly move outside of them.
Yeah.
But you're not drawing for yourself. You're drawing for somebody else, and I think that's something that's really important that we need to kind of instill in students.
It's like the biggest thing, isn't it? Because it's like I don't teach art. I just I kind of just know. Like people will come in with really fixed parameters of what they do.
They will. Yeah.
Like what their art is, what their style is. And
it's hard to let that go as well.
Well, I was gonna say, but I'm guessing and it's probably a little bit like being in a way like a fine artist going, well, but this is what I do. Mm-hmm. And then moving into a career or an industry where it's a little bit more like, we know you can draw, but what we need is you to do it this way. So do you get, I'll ask this, and it's not as a yes or no, but just in like a general way, is it easy for people to kind of break away from a style that they've got very embedded in?
I think it depends on the person.
Okay.
I think some people will find it really easy and some people find it very, very difficult. I think it also does depend on how long you might have been drawing for.
Yeah.
If you've been drawing in your very particular style for a very, very long time, I think it's quite hard to move away from it. But honestly, I think it's up to the individual person. Some people will find it really easy and some people will really struggle with it.
But it is something that's kind of important
in
terms of
important.
Being able to kind of facilitate and do what someone needs you to do.
Definitely. Being able to accept critique and being willing to change things is a massive thing as well. You can't really have an ego. You can argue your point to a point, but you can't just say, well, I'm not doing that because doesn't fit with my vision.
I guess it's where the research element comes in and understanding, say, we'll go back to 16th century embroidery because hell, why not? if you come in and you've been told that's the aesthetic, like that's what you're doing, and you do it and then someone goes, oh, but I want it X, Y, and Z. You have a leg to stand on and argue, but it wouldn't move in the way that you're wanting it to move. It wouldn't be floating around. Yeah. It would be quite heavy. So there's a research element that you can kind of like use
there is
to
a research element.
Support what you're doing.
Yeah, but and it's not, you don't necessarily have to, if somebody says you're creating something for a 16th century setting, you don't necessarily have to use references just from that time. You can look outside of it and just take some little bits of inspiration. I mean, the Tudor costumes that we see on TV shows are not very, they are accurate to a point, but there are inaccuracies. But I remember reading in a book once about costume design, and somebody said, it's not about creating something that is factual. It's about creating something that's believable for an audience.
Yeah.
And that's what we do as concept artists. It's about creating something that's believable for the world that you're designing for.
Use a term called verisimilitude. I don't know if that's one you've come across.
No.
So I'll drop this because that's exactly what yeah. that means. So it's real for the thing that's
yes.
being
yeah.
made.
Yeah.
So it has like those sensibilities,
yeah.
but yeah, not actual. It kind of yeah. has a realism within that thing
yeah.
that you're creating. So I'm going to go back to your mm-hmm. journey, if that's
yeah,
okay, because we diverged and I like to diverge because yeah. it's really interesting. But so you've done your fine art,
yeah.
you've taken a sort of a foundation degree, which kind of gave you a taste of quite a lot of different things,
yeah.
have I got that right?
Yeah, it was multidisciplinary, so it was a lot of, it was sometimes working with textiles, sometimes working with paint, just mostly sketching and stuff, and then I wasn't entirely sold. I enjoy fine art,
yeah,
but I enjoy having a bit more of a sense of direction. I sometimes struggle with coming up with just something quite, like abstract.
Okay.
I like having a goal to work towards, something to design.
So
for.
Is it a little bit like you like having that, like you said, direction, but like you like having
direction.
A brief. You
yeah,
like
I
having
like working
on a brief. To
yeah.
something that's got an end, a clear end goal
yeah.
kind of thing.
Yeah,
cool.
I don't like working on something that kind of feels nebulous and
yeah.
abstract. I like working on something that I know has an end goal, and somebody, whether that be me or somebody else, has a vision for what that should look like.
Yeah.
Because that gives me a sense of direction then.
Okay.
I don't kind of feel a bit aimless.
Yeah.
But I did my foundation degree, and then I was just kind of like, I don't know what I want to do. And I wasn't going to go to uni, actually.
What were you
going
to do? What was the plan?
I have no idea.
Okay.
No idea. And then I just kind of stumbled across concept art.
Mm.
And I think I was a late applicant. But then I obviously applied for concept art.
Yeah.
I did my 3 years at uni. And I started looking into costume design in my final year at uni.
Yeah.
For my final year project.
Because that's usually where you start kind of bringing
yeah.
your ideas about what it is, where you want to be,
yeah.
isn't it, really? So a lot of people tend to kind of focus in on stuff that is
yeah.
their thing, don't they?
Yeah. So I did costume design. I designed a costume. I made a costume. And I did really well on my FYP. I did get a first. And then I graduated. Obviously, it was COVID. So I was just kind of a bit aimless for a bit.
Yeah.
Worked in retail. Had my own little business for a couple of months. Before I was like, I kind of want to get back on the horse.
Yeah.
And I did the masters here. And I actually really went into concept art then, which is when I started to do more research based stuff.
Okay.
And I found out that I really did enjoy research.
It's how it evolved and developed
yeah.
from that initial finding out almost over those 3 years what concept art is.
Yeah, because I've
then
worked,
really like directing
I've worked with
it.
Clients on commissions and stuff. I've done a lot of commission work. I've done like little illustration stuff. But when I went back to uni and did my masters, and I came across like a lot of research and realized like how much research was there, but also how much was missing for this specific field.
Nice.
And how very little research there is in games in general. Like it's
okay,
it's there, but it's very new in the research world, so we're just kind of like trying to, it's like a constantly evolving environment, which is really interesting. And then obviously I was offered a job here when I finished my master's,
yeah.
so I'm doing my PhD at the minute.
How's that going?
Good, I think.
There's always a hesitation when you ask about
yeah.
a PhD.
It's always it's going okay, I think.
So you're doing costume for
I'm
it,
doing
yeah?
something very specific.
Mm.
So I'm doing how video games simulate grief responses in players using visual elements, so visual stimuli in games.
Yeah.
So that could specifically be like what I look at is very specifically costume design, but I also look at other visual elements that might heighten that. So I'm currently writing a paper on Silent Hill 2
mm-hmm.
and about how that kind of communicates the grief that the characters experience through the costumes that the characters wear. But then there are games that also don't just convey what the characters are feeling. There's also games that make you feel grief as you play them. So it's kind of like trying to find the balance between trying to convey a grief that a character might feel, but then also trying to make the player process grief in their own way.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what I'm interested in. So how we can use visual elements to help people process grief.
So it's moving on from exactly sort of just the play thing to kind of really kind of conceptualising what we can do about it. Because film's obviously done that for quite a long time, but obviously that's game is like the evolution in a way where it's the next step and you're involved. And
I think it's becoming, it is becoming a recognised art form.
Oh, and it hasn't always been.
I think as games have become more evolved, it's definitely becoming more of a recognised art form, and it is using techniques from film. Mm. There are costume designers that that we hire for video games now.
Because
they want to use the techniques used in film to kind of emulate that same feeling that we get, to convey character stories, to convey emotions, to simulate responses in an audience, like emotional responses in an audience. So I think we're trying to embrace that side of it now. I think games like The Last of Us 2, The Last of Us games are really, really interesting for that, and how the characters evolve and how it is almost considered like a film would be considered in its production, and how the characters will be dressed, how the characters look and all of that kind of stuff.
It's really interesting that you're kind of making those comparisons, and you're talking about like we bring in costume designers, and it's interesting because I don't think particularly until a couple of people sit down in a studio and with a drill going, by the way, and have a chat about it, that you actually think there's all these kind of roles and jobs and specialties that maybe as someone who maybe just like likes video games or is interested or hasn't even thought about it, actually there are these like routes that wouldn't necessarily be.
And as the industry expands, there's going to be more niches. There will be more niches. I think we're seeing, even in the past 5 years with the advancement of the industry, we're seeing more roles pop up, more specific roles pop up as well. And I think that's really interesting.
I think as you get games that are just more, I'll use the word complex, but you know what I mean, like have more optionality, are larger, have if we go Baldur's Gate 3, have these opportunities for these extra things, and are quite cinematic and do feel very involved, and there is a narrative, and it's a kind of a strong vein through it, then you start to see these other opportunities kind of rising, and it's really interesting. So I know something that you're really, and the reason you're probably on this podcast is that you think women in game are really, really important. That there's definitely sort of a space for women in game, and we were chatting a little bit, weren't we, about the idea that I think your course concept art, and it might be kind of an obvious thing to say because it's art based and that's very stereotypical, but I think it's just based on what we see when we walk into a room, it's the more heavily gendered female pursuit, if that makes sense. I'm just going to ask, like, you're not like the definitive spokesperson for females or people in concept art, but just out of interest, because it's sort of where you ended up as well, and there's like that trajectory of you did art and you did history, and why do you think it's sort of a little bit more female, like, oriented? What do you think it is about something like concept art that means that you do actually have more female gendered students program?
I honestly don't know. I think we do try and push a lot to try and, I think it is also as well,
say it because I know what you're thinking.
I think it's the safe space of it as well. Like there's a, if we look at like things like programming, which is a shame, it's majority men.
It's male dominated.
But there are girls that are interested in it, and there must be girls that are interested in it. But it's, I was having this discussion with a high school teacher, because I go to schools and talk about our courses, and he was saying that because we did a talk and it just said that we were there for a career talk on games.
Yeah.
And I think one girl showed up the entire day and we were there all day. And yeah. there were separate talks and only one girl showed up. And she was really interested. But most of the boys that showed up kind of weren't really interested very much.
Mm.
Probably because I had misconstrued what we might be talking about.
Yeah.
Didn't think that maybe the games industry was as in-depth, maybe. I think there's a lot of miscommunication about what actually goes into making games.
Yeah.
And I think I remember being a teenage girl and mm-hmm. being basically told that you're not allowed to be interested in games.
Well, do you know what? Like, I'll be honest. You know when I went, say the thing that I think yeah. you're thinking. I kind of thought it would be like there are subjects which the boys, let's say, mm-hmm. gravitate towards and are encouraged towards.
Yeah.
And there are things that the girls are gravitating towards and again are encouraged towards. Mm-hmm. I think I sum up the art and history and English.
Yeah.
And it's one of those things where maybe people don't see themselves within a different sphere.
I think it's you try and get yourself interested in things that your friends are interested in.
Yeah, so
and a lot
too.
Of your friends might not be interested in games, or they might be saying they're not interested in games because of how they might be perceived.
Yeah.
I wasn't necessarily overly popular. But I was very vocal about the fact that I did like video games and the type of video games that I like, maybe the more nerdy video games. So then that becomes, it like kind of alienates you even a bit
it's
more.
It's another thing.
It's
isn't
another
it?
Thing.
When you're a teenager, and
yeah.
I don't know, I think this is everyone, I think, mm-hmm. unless you're very, very confident in you, which,
yeah.
let's face it, as a teenager, you're kind of not, because hormones
no.
and everything.
No.
It's a sort of another thing to kind of bury or put to one side.
Oh, absolutely.
Because, like you say, you want to fit in.
I think it's there's not really a space, especially that I'm queer as well.
Mm.
So you've got that thing that already alienates you. You're a girl,
yeah.
you're queer, and you're interested in games. So then it's just like, oh, well, I'll do art.
Yeah.
Because I like art.
Yeah.
But what else can I do? Because I like games, but everyone tells me there's no jobs in games.
Yeah, it's an interesting one, isn't it? And
yeah.
it's kind of parental, it's careers. Because
yeah.
I guess, in a way, if you think of... It's obviously changing, and I'm very, very old.
It is changing. I mean, I'm seeing a lot of like younger girls that are in my family or are like younger siblings of friends.
Mm.
They're interested in games and they want to do games and they will openly talk about their interest
yeah.
in games. And I think that's really nice to see.
I'm presuming also like parents are actually on board with it. So mm-hmm. it's probably we're getting towards maybe the generation where parents are gamers as well.
Yeah.
And actually see the value of the
Definitely.
Thing.
Definitely.
Rather than if you think of like an older generation
oh,
of parents going... But that's what you waste
yeah, well,
a load
like
of
my,
your time on, you know. And
neither of my parents ever really played games. So for us, it wasn't other than something that we did for just a pastime. Our parents never really talked with us about it, so that passion might not have ever been fostered because we never had a parental figure to talk to about games.
Yeah.
Whereas my fiancé, her dad,
yeah.
has always played video games. He's platinum Bloodborne, like he is that devoted, like he loves video games. So she has always had somebody, she's always had a parental figure that she can talk to about video games.
Yeah.
And I think that's important, is having a role model that makes you feel like it's kind of not a waste of time.
Well, I was gonna say, you're sitting there going, oh, there's all these girls like from friends' children or like my family. I'm like, oh, yeah, look in a mirror, because you're the one doing the thing that's really cool. So that's like a part of it as well.
Yeah,
so
I think it's having a figure, because when I was in school, I didn't know any girls that worked in games, any women that worked in games.
Yeah.
I didn't even know that that was an option. And, I mean, there wasn't that many. There wasn't even that many women game protagonists.
Well, I was going to see this. I was going to ask about this because as someone who's grown up playing, we talked about Zelda and we talked about Doom, which you shouldn't have been like looking at. I'm just interested. So, as someone who does game and, mm-hmm. and is kind of like. Enjoys that and kind of looks at the environments. What are your favourite games now? And are there any good games out there, in your opinion, mm-hmm. where you do have female protagonists? You do feel, and if I can talk to your queerness as well, like you feel seen and you feel included and all of these sorts of things.
I know it might be cliched, but The Last of Us... Because
I don't think it's cliche. I think it's one of the few in a way.
It's actually really important. I mean, me and my partner were around probably the same age, maybe a little bit older than Ellie in the first Last of Us game when that game was maybe released. I can't remember the year.
Don't try because it won't come back and then someone will say you were wrong and then, But around a similar age, it's sort of the whole Harry Potter thing that people read the books and grew up with.
And then the second game's released and I'm a bit older, but still a similar age.
Yeah.
And I think that is really important because she's a queer character. Mm-hmm. She's not overly sexualized.
Mm.
She's a complex character in her own right.
Yeah.
She's not one-dimensional.
Yeah.
And that is really important. And I think that is a genuinely important game to discuss. And it's also about having characters that have faults, that are human and don't feel perfect and aren't infallible. Because it's nice to have somebody to look up to, but it's nice to see a human character in a game kind of isn't just there for tragedy. I know The Last of Us is obviously tragic.
It works with a lot of things, doesn't it?
But it's good to just see a queer female character in a video game.
He's also not just there as support for the
for
the cisgendered male who's then going to save the day. Because there's a lot of fridging that goes on in game and film and there's all these things. But that's a really interesting choice because it's just that idea of, as someone who is involved in video games, kind of knows how they get put together, but also then has something that they've enjoyed playing that actually does speak to them as female and queer and they can be seen and all of these things.
It's just little things like that just make you feel like part of the community.
And that's a really important thing.
Yeah.
So I know you're going into lots of high schools and kind of talking to people. We were talking a bit about not just aiming at people who are doing, say, computing or something like that, but maybe aiming at those people who are doing the courses
I mean we've talked about how girls are pushed more towards those courses, and if we want more girls in the games industry, why aren't we going specifically into art GCSE classes?
Into those spaces.
Going into those spaces and talking to them.
Yeah.
As somebody who was once in their position, but giving them the chance to know that there's a career out there that they might not know anything about.
I don't think people really think about it. It's an interesting one with game, because unless you are, I think, deeply into modding... or deeply into getting under the hood of a game, you don't particularly think too much about it. If it's good, it's good and you enjoy it and you can have those connections that you were talking about with the Last of Us. So that idea of a narrative that draws you in. There's a character that's like me, or there's a character that's like someone I know, and whatever it might be. And if it's me, you get to run around and kill things. But that's just me. But it's not necessarily something that you particularly heavily think about. Because if you think of, say, art in a school, I'm being very general, but it was a long time since I was at school, but it's not like you're looking at digital drawing or development. You're looking at, if it was me, drawing still lives
that's what we want. We want people that have, especially in concept art, we teach life drawing still, so having those fundamental drawing skills that aren't just digital are so important, because you can't be a good digital artist if you're not a good traditional artist.
And I think that's super interesting, but I feel like that's not then communicated? Because if I'm on the outside and I'm going, oh, you want to be a concept artist,
well,
in my head, then you're going to get the old Wacom out, you're going to start drawing digitally.
Yeah.
And that's maybe like a hurdle for people where they're going, well, but I've never done mm-hmm. that. I've always picked a pencil up and I've drawn. Yeah. I used to draw people. I used to draw, like, you know, all of the stuff that you would associate with art,
but
in inverted commas.
You look at older art books, they're all done with pen and paper. Mm-hmm. All of that original concept art, early concept art, is done on pen and paper. And you can still get all of your ideas down on a pen with just a sketchbook.
Yeah.
I think we all, as the entire concept art team, most of us will be carrying around a sketchbook.
Well,
because
I just say one of your colleagues is an absolute beast for doing, what is it, two paintings a day?
Joe Grano.
Yes.
Yeah, oh, sorry, my tummy's rumbling.
It's all right. It's the excitement of being in a little blue room.
No, I think he does 800 paintings a year.
800 paintings a year. But we're talking paintings, right? We're talking...
That's digital, but he's started doing oil paintings as well. He sketches all the time. Yeah. He's constantly going to live drawing because it is about keeping up those skills.
Yeah.
I primarily work in digital, but I actually prefer working traditionally.
Nice. So how many paintings a year are you doing?
Not that many. Not 800 a year, unfortunately. But
well,
I do a lot of sketching. I'm constantly sketching in my sketchbook, mostly things from life.
They say, like, just jot, like, even if you're on the bus, just draw the backs of the people's heads or whatever it is, just whatever's kind of in front of you. Just
I think, because we're so used to just drawing people from the front.
Like, I don't know, it's quite interesting.
Full, but sometimes trying to get the angle right on somebody who's, you've got the back of the head and maybe the head's turned slightly to the left, so you can just see, like, the tip of their nose
and not have it look weird.
And stuff like that, I think that's important. Because it shows that you can do have that technical knowledge.
Yeah.
And then if you've done it before and you've done it a million times, you can recreate it again from your imagination.
Yeah.
And that's what we want. We want those traditional drawing skills so that you can recreate stuff from your imagination. That's why we say to people that they should be doing, like, studies and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Because if you know how something works, you can recreate it in your mind. That's why it pays off to be a nerd as well.
Oh, I love it.
Because if you understand something in depth, then you know how to paint it. So say I understand how this is massively massive tangent.
Go full nerd.
But say I understand how fabrics are woven.
Yep.
I then understand how they reflect light. Mm-hmm. I can then recreate them from my imagination.
Yeah.
And that's why it's important to kind of go a bit in depth on your research sometimes.
I love it. I think we've done a full circuit. We've gone from why concept art back to why concept art. That's awesome. Molly, thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
I think it's just really nice to hear someone who hasn't gone a really direct route.
Yeah.
But also has kind of ended up in where they kind of should be.
Well, I think
and want
a space,
other people too.
There should be a space in the industry for everybody.
Right, I think we're done.
Yeah.
Molly, thank you so
Thanks
much.
For
this
having
has been
me.
So lovely. And that's Game Changers. Thanks so much. Bye.